How super fitting that we talk food and drink this Thanksgiving here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Your kitchen might be a busy place right now, and that is where the heart is, right? Regardless of how vacuumed the living room is, it's the kitchen where we're drawn to for conversation and delicious food and drink. So what traditions do you have for your guests? Is it a certain dish? Do you have certain activities for downtime as the food cooks? What cooking or hosting advice can you share? Take a break. Join us, 800-642-1234. Paul Kahn is executive chef of 12 Chicago restaurants. His heart is at his cabin in the Northwoods of Wisconsin. He's won several James Beard Foundation awards. His new book is called Cooking for Good Times. Super delicious, super simple. Paul, welcome to the Ideas Network.
It's great to be here.
All right, so the question is, how close are you to Presque Isle? Will you get there this Thanksgiving?
No, I'm actually sitting in my pickup truck in front of our house in Chicago. But I will get there in the next couple weeks.
What is it about your cabin where you can really think and reflect in the kitchen?
You know, I think it's a bit of a stretch to call it a cabin. It's a house. On a lake. But, you know, obviously in Chicago, I have a lot of the phone rings every 15 minutes or there's a fire to put out somewhere. So it's really just the ability to step away. And, you know, I do, believe it or not, love to cook after 35 years of, you know, working in kitchens professionally. And so, you know, it's sort of like a hobby up there. It just gives me time to focus. And I bring cookbooks up and try new things, and it's really, really wonderful.
Well, we love cabins here in Wisconsin. Describe the scenery around your lake house.
Well, you know, the house itself is what really drew me up there. You know, I just started surfing online looking for somewhere deep in the woods and found this beautiful house that was built in, I believe, 1968. And it's actually categorized as a late prairie school house. The architect, from what I've read, was a student of Frank Lloyd Wright, and it's sort of has a Japanese / Scandinavian aesthetic to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a really steep hill that goes down to the lake. Our chain of lakes is 5 beautiful lakes. The topography is pretty rugged, and you know, what more can I say? We have a big back porch that overlooks the forest. We haven't thinned the forest. We like it nice and thick. It's a mixture of hemlock and fir and pine and maple trees.
Incredible.
Dense woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's spectacular.
And I would assume you spend most of your time then in the kitchen.
You know, I would say I split it evenly between the gorgeous lakes in Vilas County and the kitchen.
Very fair. So one of your restaurants centers around this idea of avec, which means with in French. How does this idea inspire who you are and what you create through your dishes, through your businesses, basically through your DNA?
Yeah, you know, Avec is the second restaurant that we opened. And really the idea came from my first trip to Europe. You know, to make a long story short, my wife, before I met her, was in a pretty horrific motorcycle accident in France with a friend. And she convalesced high in the Swiss Alps in a town called Geis, and made a lot of lifelong friends there. And so the first, you know, after we met, the first opportunity for us to go to Europe was to go to Zurich and then drive 2 hours to Geis. Our friend Verena picked us up at the airport. She popped a bottle of champagne in the car and drove us, you know, up into the mountains. And when we got there, there was easily a foot or more. I think it was probably more like 3 feet of snow on the ground. And a procession of Mary's old friends started to show up. And their house centers around a hearth. And Verena and myself just started cooking and popping bottles of wine and drinking. And it was really about friends. You know, that's really sort of what that restaurant is all about. Avec has 5 communal tables. Or you sit with people you don't know, which sounds scary to people. But it's become quite an amazing place. You know, of all of our restaurants, people come up to me and I call them Avec zombies. And they say, Avec's my favorite restaurant. Avec's my favorite restaurant. And I say, I love it too. And they say, no, you don't understand. Avec's my favorite restaurant. And it's just this idea of food coming out of the hearth. Most of it is served in the vessel that it's cooked in, whether it be cast iron or terracotta. And it's just really hot and really, really heartwarming. And so that's where that idea came from. That restaurant is 16 years old and going strong. And that's where the new book, Cooking for Good Times, came from.
We're spending time this Thanksgiving with executive chef Paul Kahn. His new book is called Cooking for Good Times, super delicious, super simple. And phone lines are super open at 800-642-1234. Are you hosting Thanksgiving or any holiday meal or gathering? How do you manage it all? What duties do you have for your mates in the kitchen right now? Are you a good delegator? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Well, before we dig into recipes, you have some truths that you put into this cookbook. What would you tell us? What would you tell people who feel overwhelmed by the idea of hosting or cooking for a group?
Yeah, you know, for me, one of the most important truths is stick with things that you know. I think people get overly excited when they're entertaining and they want to impress people. And really the best way to impress people is by being comfortable in your kitchen, mastering recipes that you know that are delicious, and just having fun yourself. You know, otherwise the frazzled host, people feel that, and it affects the party. So, you know, that's what, again, Cooking for Good Times is all about, a series of master recipes that you can try. None of them are difficult. None of the techniques are difficult. None of the ingredients are hard to find, but they're tried and true recipes that you can master. And then there are variations on those recipes based on ingredients that are available seasonally. So for me, that's the truth. Have fun yourself and your guests will have fun.
I love how you say to have food available as you cook, like make food for cooking. You know, why do you think that that's really necessary as your guests hang out in the kitchen with you and watch what's coming together?
You know, I heard it in the introduction for the holiday show. People just gravitate towards the kitchen. And, you know, most of the kitchens that I'm in have an open plan. Our kitchen in our house is, you know, exposed to the dining room and same up in the Northwoods. So it's just, if you're prepared with the main meal, you know, most of the things in professional kitchens are prepared ahead of time, you know, whether it be a braised pork shoulder or the ingredients for a salad that you just toss together at the last minute. And that's really the key. So all that stuff's ready. Maybe your roast is in the oven cooking or your shoulder's in the oven braising. And when people get there, you throw together some simple things that you can enjoy, you know, pop a bottle of Gamay or Rosé or a couple of beers and just have a good time. And again, it all goes back to, you know, maybe it's selfish, but my objective is to have a good time at my own party. So and that happens in the kitchen. I don't know what it is, but no matter how your house is set up, no matter how small the kitchen is, people will cram in the kitchen when you're cooking for a party.
We're talking with chef restaurateur Paul Kahn about his livelihood and how dishes come together with less fuss. Are you hosting Thanksgiving or any holiday meal? How do you manage? Do you have recipes people love and come to expect? What ingredients do you have a lot of at this moment that you're trying to figure out, what do I do with this? Join in All Things Cooking, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with chef Paul Kahn here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about amazing food this Thanksgiving on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here's one belief that Chicago executive chef Paul Kahn lives by. One dish plus a beautiful green salad is absolutely a meal. That is so true. Another truth, you're going to be most successful if you have a small repertoire of dynamite dishes. What are some truths that you swear by in the kitchen? What recipes do you love to prepare at your cabin? Are you cooking for a crowd? Any inspiration you need at this moment on your dish? Let's talk. 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Paul Kahn's new cookbook is called Cooking for Good Times, and he stays with us. So, Paul, we need to have a heart-to-heart about root vegetables. We need to talk root vegetables quite seriously. I mean, I love my onions. I love my garlic. But and you use garlic particularly, I noticed, through a lot of your dishes. There is this recipe, though, for a variation of roasted vegetables in your book that includes smoky yogurt, crisp lentils, and dill vinaigrette. What is going on with that particular recipe?
Let's talk about root vegetables. Well, honestly, ever since I was a young cook, I've been really attracted to root vegetables, believe it or not. I'm a gardener, and in the fall, all that stuff is ready to go. And I think they're oft misunderstood. People don't know what to do with a celery root or turnip or rutabaga, carrot, etc. And so I give a simple recipe to roast those vegetables. The first part of it is peeling off a little piece of the skin and tasting it. There's tons of nutrients in the skin and tons of flavor. But if it's tough like shoe leather, you want to peel it off. If it's tender, like on a fresh beet or a golden beet, I leave it on cut up those vegetables into little wedges, the right size pieces. I described the exact dimensions in the book. And then instead of just tossing it with olive oil, salt, and pepper, I like to heat up a pan with a neutral oil really hot. And then I throw those roots in there. The pores open a little bit. I season them with salt and pepper. I move them around, and then I put them into a relatively hot oven to cook through. The key for me is I add either honey or sugar and a sprig of rosemary and thyme. And that imparts a little herbaceousness, obviously, but the sugar or honey really brings out this incredible natural earthiness and sweetness that the roots have that's often characterized as bitterness, and it's why people don't like them. So that really intensifies the flavor and coaxes out all the great things about roots. And then I combine them with a number of different things in the book. And the one that you're describing, smoky yogurt, you know, we actually at Avec, we actually smoke the yogurt, but it's just as simple to add a little liquid smoke or get a little bit of smoked salt and add that to it. We add a little lemon juice, we add a little salt and pepper, and yogurt becomes something special unto itself. As far as the crispy lentils go, you know, we have this this habit at all of our restaurants of adding something, we call them crispy bits, adding something to a salad. That's nutty and delicious. It could be just toasted hazelnuts or cashews. But in this case, we soak French green lentils or beluga lentils overnight and then drain them. And then in a skillet with, you know, about an eighth of an inch of olive oil, we just fry them up until they're crispy and then drain them and season them with a little salt. And that's something that I'll keep in a container for, you know, a week. And they're really nutty and really crunchy, sort of offsets that, you know, cheesiness of the yogurt. The sweetness of the root vegetables, it works well.
Leading question here, but what happens if you don't soak those lentils overnight?
I think when you try to fry them, they'll be like rocks in the center.
A date with your dentist.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, let's talk about bread here for a moment. How did you begin making panzanella?
You know, one of the things that I often find myself doing is going to other cities to do charity events that chef compatriots support. So if there's a cause, whether it be childhood cancer or an educational program in another city, the chefs often organize charity events to raise money for those organizations. And there's one that I've supported for years called Alex's Lemonade Stand, and it's a charity that raises money to fight childhood cancer. Incredible national organization. My friend Mark Vetri started the first chef event called the Great Chef Event in Philadelphia. And it's become an incredible event. They raise over $1 million a year there. But I found myself in the kitchen next to an old pal of mine. His name is Chris Bianco. And I've always considered him to be the greatest pizza maker in America. He has a restaurant in Phoenix. originally from Brooklyn, New York, and just a real character. And these events, we serve about 1,000 people. And Chris was making a panzanella, and I'm not an accomplished Italian chef. I certainly love pasta and have tried cooking a lot of Italian dishes, but Chris really knows his stuff. And so he was making a traditional panzanella with tomatoes and cucumbers and a red wine vinaigrette with a bunch of garlic that has dried oregano in it, you know, beautiful dried oregano from Italy. And that really inspired me. And I've taken that idea and sort of spun it into any number of dishes. You know, for example, for my Thanksgiving today, we're serving a shaved Brussels sprout salad.
Nice.
And it's a shaved Brussels sprout panzanella. We make a very simple apple cider vinaigrette with golden raisins. Probably the flavor key for me is we take red onions, toss them with a little bit of olive oil, salt, and pepper, and then in a smoking hot pan or on a grill, we char them, almost burnt. So the slabs of onion, which are about 3/4 of an inch thick, get really charred on the outside, but are still a little bit raw on the inside. And then when they're still warm, I throw them into a stainless steel bowl, splash them with balsamic vinegar, and then cover them with plastic wrap and let them continue to steam until the insides get tender. And it's really like a meat substitute. They're so savory and so delicious. And then we chop those rings up and add those to the thinly shaved raw Brussels sprouts, the toasted, torn, beautiful pieces of bread, and the vinaigrette with golden raisins in it. And it the longer it sits, the sort of juicier and more delicious the bread gets.
Oh, yeah, it soaks it all in.
Yeah, I think it's a great great variation on stuffing. Although, you know, you got to still serve stuffing. It's not a substitute at Thanksgiving. But not everyone eats stuffing, I've noticed over the years. So this will be a nice opportunity for people to get their veggies.
Paul Kahn is a chef and cookbook author. He's won James Beard Awards for Best Chef Midwest, an outstanding chef. We're soaking in some of his wisdom from years in the kitchen. What do you want to ask a James Beard Award winning chef? He's ready to tackle your ingredient quandary at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So you're a fan of serving two smaller dishes along with one large one when you invite friends over. And on the face of it, that might sound like more work for some people. But how can grains make this more manageable?
Well, you know, I think the thing that people don't realize is it's really fine to serve grains at room temperature. You know, Avec is sort of a Midwest spin on a Mediterranean restaurant. And we really love the tabbouleh idea, whether it be with wild rice or brown rice or freca or you name it. Any grain is an opportunity there. And you can cook the grain ahead of time and then turn it into a salad, you know, toss it with a ton of chopped parsley, a vinaigrette, any number of things. And so I think people get stressed out about everything being hot, everything hitting the table at the same time. You know, in an Avec, we start with smaller dishes. We serve them first, and then we'll pull the braised pork shoulder or the whole fish or the roast chicken out of the oven. So really people, I think, need to break some of those traditions that cause them stress when they're entertaining.
Yeah. And you can store those grains in your refrigerator for a couple days.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I've been really, really enjoying for the last couple of months, one of our friends up north gets us incredible wild rice. And I've never learned so much about wild rice, but it's really great.
Is that Minnesota wild rice or Wisconsin wild rice?
Are you kidding me? It's Wisconsin wild rice.
Just checking.
just checking. I don't want to get in trouble. But at any rate, I didn't know that there's lake rice and river rice and all different grades. But of course, for me, the beauty of wild rice is there's no proportions. You just cover it with water and let it rip. And, you know, right when it gets to the degree of tenderness that you like, you drain the water off. And I like to throw a knob of butter in there and some scallions and cover it and let it steep on the stove for a bit. But the great thing about it is after it's been refrigerated, you know, back into a saute pan with just a little bit of water and a lid, and it comes back, you know, if you want to serve it hot as if you had just cooked it. So, you know, again, people need to prepare a lot more ahead. You know, pull things out of the fridge that are done. Make it as simple on yourself as you possibly can.
Paul Kahn is executive chef of 12 restaurants in Chicago. His new book is called Cooking for Good Times, and he's telling us how recipes don't have to be made with military precision. Don't sweat the small stuff. Your stories, your questions about meal prep, 800-642-1234. Did you used to think hosting was too difficult or overwhelming? What changed with you? What cooking or hosting advice can you share? Call in as you stir in the stove or tweet us, WPR Mornings. My favorite recipe from the book, by the way, cheater hummus. Two words, cheater hummus. It's okay, come clean, easy is good. There's more Paul Kahn right after this news update on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're exploring the cooking philosophy of Chicago executive chef Paul Kahn. He has a place in our heart. He finds inspiration for his restaurants from his time spent at his lake house in Presque Isle, cooking for family and friends. He calls grains with roasted cauliflower, black olives, and oranges an all-weather dish. Leeks, he says, are misunderstood. Beets, they're a year-round staple at his restaurant, Avec. So what is a staple ingredient in your kitchen? What dish gives you joy in cooking? What questions do you have for a James Beard chef? Join in, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Paul Kahn stays with us for the hour. Let's go to the phones here. Tom is joining us from Burlington. Hi, Tom. What's your question?
You can't beat Wisconsin for a beautiful, wonderful Thanksgiving. It's just the trees and the smells and everything else. My aunt was newly married, and she called her mother said, how am I supposed to clean this turkey? And her mother said, well, you have to, or bake the turkey, said, well, you have to clean it first. And after the Thanksgiving was over, she called her up, and the grandmother said, well, how was your meal? And she said, well, I couldn't get the soap out of the turkey.
Oh, no.
My question is there a special way that you're supposed to wash these turkeys?
You know, if that's geared towards me, you know, I just a little cool water. I like to rinse out the cavity and then with paper towels, I just dry it up as best I can. I think it's really important before you roast the turkey for it to be good and dry. So I like to put the turkey rinsed and dried in the fridge, uncovered overnight. And that air in the fridge helps form a pellicle or a coating on the outside of the bird, which will make the crust crispier and seal in all the goodness. So that would be my recommendation.
Well, I know you, Paul, really love to do your chicken up. Are some of the principles that you apply to chicken, does that apply to the turkey?
Tons of them. I mean, my roast chicken recipe, I season the cavity inside and out with salt and pepper pretty liberally, and then rub the entire bird with softened butter, both inside and out, and extra virgin olive oil. I do the exact same thing with the turkey.
Okay. Is that how you would be doing your turkey today?
You know, the only variation, I'm doing two turkeys because I'm feeding an army of people. I'm going to make a paste out of shallots and garlic, extra virgin olive oil, and some fresh herbs, mostly parsley, but a little bit of rosemary and thyme. And I work my hand in between the breast meat and the skin to loosen it up, and I spoon that mixture underneath the skin. So one turkey I'm going to cook on the rotisserie in the backyard over wood.
Oh, wow.
Which will be exciting. I hope it's a 20-pound turkey, so I hope the motor is not going to explode on the rotisserie. That would ruin the holiday. But the other turkey, I'm trying something new this year. I'm separating the breast and the leg and thigh, and I'm doing the same thing with the breast. It'll cook much quicker in a roasting pan in the oven. But the leg and thighs, I'm roasting separately, and then when they're about 40 minutes out, I'm going to put them on top of a pan of stuffing and finished them that way. So, and I've also brined and roasted the necks of the birds. And so those will go on top of the stuffing as well. And that way I'm going to hopefully get a bunch of that real turkey flavor in my stuffing.
It's always fun to hear how chefs continue to reimagine the Thanksgiving turkey and all the experimentation that you do around these turkeys.
Yeah.
You know, we've gone almost most of the interview here without talking about cheese, which would be a cardinal sin here in Wisconsin. We need to do a little cheese talk here, heart to heart. So when you're talking about your guidelines for, you know, stress-free hosting, cheese does come up. You say melt some cheese. Tell us how you were introduced to raclette.
Yeah, you know, that that trip that I told you about to Europe the first time, our friends set us up with a tour of a winery in the south of France and loaned us her car. And so we shot south from the Swiss Alps in Switzerland through Italy, over the Pyrenees, and into Provence, which I'm just saying that off the tongue like it was an easy thing. It was terrifying for me, having never driven in Europe and been in Europe. But this was pre-GPS, so we got lost a lot. And when we finally found the winery that we were going to stay at, it was along the Mediterranean Sea. It was dark. I think it was probably 9 o'clock at night. They invited us into their home, which was kind of a little mini chateau, and they treated us to raclette. And it was in a room full of wine barrels, and the host was drawing cloudy white wine from the barrels, and we were cooking up all kinds of great vegetables and meats and stuff on the top of the cooker. And of course, melting raclette, in these little, almost like Teflon shovel things that you use, underneath the heating element. And then, you boil a potato. They're already done. They're warm, and you kind of smash that on the plate, top it with, the meat and the vegetables that you've been browning off on top of the cooker. And then you dump the molten cheese, hopefully a little burnt on the top. Over the whole pile. And for me, if you've never done raclette, it's incredible. I mean, you could buy raclette makers online for, they're very reasonable. And, everyone that I turn on to it ends up buying one and pulling it out for holidays. And the beauty is, everything's done. You just sit at the table, you pop a beer or a bottle of wine and you have at it, and you can take breaks to watch football, turn the thing down, come back, turn it back up. Cook more stuff. It's a real celebration meal. It's really, really fun.
What kind of drink pairs well with raclette? What would you suggest?
You know, I don't mean to sound like a lush, but really anything. That's kind of the message. I mean, I wouldn't have a martini with raclette, but if that's what turns you on, go for it, you know?
Okay.
But in all honesty, the philosophy that we spout in the book is people stress out about that too. And for me, you know, there's certain things that work well with almost any food, you know, rosé, even, you know, pink wine, even in the winter, I think it's okay. I love, the Gamay grape from France. It's a light kind of tangy red that I think works well with just about anything, but really, whatever you love is what you should have with your meal.
Talking with Paul Kahn, he's a chef who revels in cooking up food for others at his northern Wisconsin lake cabin. We're talking to him about his new cookbook, Cooking for Good Times. Super delicious, super simple. We have 5 recipes, by the way, from this cookbook on our morning show page at WPR.org. You can join in. What recipe do you want help with this morning? How are your side dishes doing? What is your favorite cheese to complement your meal? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Paul, let's talk fish here for a moment. You had this experience as a kid watching someone get their arms around a giant northern pike and then frying it up and eating it. What was that, you know, that experience like as a kid for really eating that fresh fish right out of the lake?
Yeah, you know, memories throughout my life that have really influenced me. Sometimes I'm not sure if they were a dream or reality. You know, it was so long ago. I'm getting to be an old man here. But when I was a kid, my dad had a smoked fish business in Chicago, and you know, smoked lake fish, chubs and trout, and all kinds of great stuff. And the man that repaired his refrigeration had a house in Wisconsin. And as a kid, I think I was 3 or 4 years old. I remember watching his son wading in the shallows for a long time, and I couldn't figure out what the hell he was doing. And he, honest to God, plunged his arms in and threw. It seemed like a sea monster to me. I don't really know how big it was. I have no idea. But he threw it onto the shore. And that evening, his dad prepared it. What seemed like masterfully to me, because I think as all I had at that point were fish sticks, and it was and actually I go to a fish fry near our house, and they actually have northern pike on the menu, and I always order it, and I certainly pickle it like everyone else does, but it's so good to me. I mean, maybe people think it's a little oily or a little gamey, but I think it's an absolutely incredible fish, and he. You know, cut it into rectangular chunks, like fingers, and breaded it, and fried and pan fried it, and that was a memory that sort of turned me into a fishaholic for life.
You also make the case, though, for serving the fish whole, you know, head, tail, and all. If done correctly, what benefits does that method have?
Well,
If
you know,
done correctly.
it's. I wouldn't challenge that with the bone structure of a northern. You know, generally we do that with ocean fish, with a snapper or a bream. But it does work well with some lake fish. I think we actually cut the bones out from the inside and then replace those bones with a butter that we make. That we smear on, and then we roast the whole fish. For me, you know, the skin and all the collagen and all the stuff that's left in there really adds a lot of flavor to the fish. And it kind of everything's sealed in there, and you end up with this extremely flavorful, extremely moist whole fish. And it's great to, you know, plop that on a table for four or six people, depending on the fish. So I think it's ease of cooking. I think it's really mostly flavor.
We're learning kitchen tips and tricks, cooking philosophy from chef restaurateur Paul Kahn. His book is called Cooking for Good Times. Do you have recipes people love and have come to expect from you? Are you known for a certain appetizer or side dish? How do you cook your fish? Are you experimenting with any recipe this Thanksgiving? Let's hear about your creation. Still time for your thoughts and stories. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. It's Chef Paul Kahn who stays with us right here on the Ideas Network. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're getting bits of wisdom and kitchen inspiration this Thanksgiving morning from Chicago executive chef Paul Kahn. His new book, it's called Cooking for Good Times. More of his no-fuss advice here. Your food can absolutely go straight from the oven to a trivet on the table. Let it sit a few minutes while you relax and then eat. That's it. We're exploring his love of food and spending time at his lake house in Presque Isle. In the kitchen, surrounded by friends and family. Still time for you to get your questions answered. Bounce ideas off of Chef Paul Kahn at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And Paul stays with us for the hour. Paul, one of the dishes you serve right out of the container it's cooked in is braised pork shoulder. Why do you like to prepare this dish for others?
Well, you know, from the first day that we opened our restaurant, Evac, we put braised pork shoulder on the menu. You know, it's got a great mix of meat and fat, and when you braise it for 3 hours in the oven, that fat starts to melt, and it keeps the meat incredibly moist. And I just think it's something that's really forgiving. You know, braises are great. You can let the meat cool in the braise to soak up all that wonderful flavor that you've imparted. And it's something that you can do days ahead. So if you plan your meal over a period of days, it makes it so much easier. And again, I'm all about that ease. So your chunk of braised pork shoulder can be done 2-3 days ahead. And then it goes into a little cast iron pot with any number of things. We do one in the book that's with collard greens that we cook, you know, sort of in the Southern style with brown sugar and vinegar. And then we add kielbasa to that. And that mixture goes in with the pork shoulder. You wouldn't typically think of serving kielbasa with pork shoulder, but it's pork and it's more pork and it's smoky. And the greens are sort of sweet and savory. And that combination, again, can be done. It can be in a pot in the refrigerator the day before, 2 days before. And when your guests are on their way, pop it into the oven and warm it through. And it just makes for the easiest, most delicious meal.
Well, moving on to steak, and not to provoke any grill masters out there, but you think searing meat is really the way to go. Why should we sear a steak?
Well, you know, I tell the story of a great chef buddy of mine who lives in New York, came to visit a couple summers ago, and we didn't have an exhaust hood in our kitchen at the time, and I had a giant I own a butcher shop in Chicago, and I had a giant, gorgeous ribeye that I got from a farmer about 2.5, maybe 3 inches thick. And he started to sear the steak in a pan. He actually said, he calls me Pablo. He said, Pablo, do you want to grill the steak or do you want to sear the steak? And I said, let's sear it, John. Mm-hmm. And so we seared it and, you know, seasoned it very well on both sides with salt and pepper. And then in a cast iron pan, over high heat to the point where the whole house was full of smoke. And so we had to take a break and set it off to the side and let the house clear, and then flipped it and did the same thing on the other side, and then finished it off in a hot oven. And for me, that that crust that you form on the outside of the steak is something really spectacular. I mean, you can impart a ton of flavor from the grill. But something about that, you know, quarter inch thick of golden brown char on the outside of a steak, especially a steak that's about 3 inches thick, is something really spectacular. And then, you know, all that fat that renders off in the pan can be used to baste that steak with the addition of a little butter and a little bit of garlic and some herbs, you know, off the heat when it's done. So that's my deal. You can't really baste it. You can't do that that Butterburger move on your steak unless it's in a skillet.
You've made your case. Yeah, I hear you.
sounds it's all I got to do is say Butterburger. But it seems reasonable to me. But I want to make sure everyone remembers to always rest your meat, whether when it comes off the grill or whether it comes off of out of a skillet. A good 10 minutes really will benefit you greatly before you slice it or before you serve it.
Well, we'd be remiss if we didn't bounce dessert off of you. Do you have any advice on simple desserts?
Yeah, I have tons. You know, I am in no way, shape, or form a pastry chef and don't claim to be. So usually my advice is I call up one of the pastry chefs in our company and I say, hey, make me something gorgeous. But the two easiest things that that I turn to are olive oil cake. We make a really simple cake with extra virgin olive oil that's incredibly delicious, sort of in the Italian tradition. And then we make something called a posset, which is an English dish that's really cream that's thickened, not like panna cotta with gelatin, but it's actually thickened with lemon juice. And so it's this tangy, rich custard that is the easiest thing to make in the world. Literally, it's sugar. It's just combining some simple ingredients and then setting it up. And those are in your fridge. They can be made the day before, 2 days before. We like to set them up in individual cups. Mm-hmm. And then we top it with some fresh fruit, you know, in the summer, some sliced up peaches or berries. that we macerate with a little bit of sugar and lemon juice. But yeah, keep it simple. I'm sure there are chocoholics out there that are sneering at me right now. But I don't have an easy, simple chocolate dessert.
That's okay.
But yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah.
Keep it simple. That's my advice.
We'll forgive you. But how does that olive oil cake keep? You know, is that like you make it and you have to eat it right away?
No, you know, it's something that keeps well, just like any other cake.
Okay.
But one thing we found is we refrigerate it, and then when you want to serve it, either before or earlier in the day, we like to heat up a little bit more olive oil in a nonstick pan, and then brown it up on both sides. You know, like you'd toast a piece of toast, and it really adds like a great nutty quality to it. So toasting it up brings it right back, right out of the fridge.
Well, Paul Kahn, this has been fun. Thank you so much for joining us, and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you as well. And I want to give a special shout out to our friends up north. Have a Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving if you're listening.
Paul Kahn is an executive chef of 12 Chicago restaurants. His new cookbook is called Cooking for Good Times. Super delicious, super simple. You can find 5 of his recipes from this cookbook, including roasted and marinated roots with smoky yogurt, crisp lentils. Don't forget to soak those lentils overnight. And dill vinaigrette. They're all over on the Morning Show page at WPR.org. It is Thanksgiving here on The Morning Show, and I would like to take a moment to give thanks to a voice from Wisconsin Public Radio who you know well. Dave Potras is retiring after decades of service, and all of us at WPR want to wish him nothing but the best as he goes forward.
Today we're celebrating a very special person and iconic voice at Wisconsin Public Radio. You might even call him the voice of the station. We're wishing Dave Potras well and congratulating him on his retirement.
Well, I first met Dave because he filled in for me all those years ago on Here on Earth, and he was perfect. He never made mistakes, just completely dependable, just always there. And that voice, you know.
Who is that and what does he do? And they said, oh, that's Dave Potras. He's the announcer. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I have listened to Dave Potras for like 4 years. He's famous.
Dave Potras is an amazing teacher.
Like the person who I would look to for any manner of like a role model as far as what an on-air announcer is supposed to be.
Well, Dave is one of those mainstays of the interstitials.
Well, Dave, I'm going to miss you popping into the studio in the morning and asking how to pronounce something like Dietrich Buxtehude. Like, should we pronounce it like the German?
Dave really is a man of many talents. And with everything he's done over the airwaves for the past 30 years, he's been a steadfast advocate for you and so many listeners throughout Wisconsin and beyond. Cheers, Dave. We wish you all the best.
I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is Thanksgiving here on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.